welcome to the American Society of Anesthesiologists Perioperative Brain Health Initiative podcast, promoting brain health for older adults around the time of surgery. Before we begin, we want to thank the Perioperative Brain Health Initiative supporters, Masimo, Medtronic, and Edwards Life Sciences, as their support has provided the tools and resources to produce this podcast.
Welcome to the Perioperative Brain Health Huddle. In today's 10-minute podcast, I'm very pleased to interview Dr. Michael Avedan, the Dr. Seymour and Rose T. Brown Professor of Anesthesiology, Chief of Division of Clinical and Translational Research, and Director of the Infrastructure of Quality Improvement Research and Informatics at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis. Today, Michael and I will be discussing the results of the electroencephalography guidance of anesthesia to alleviate geriatric syndrome, otherwise known as the ENGAGES study. I'm Stacy Diner. I'm a professor of anesthesiology, perioperative, and pain medicine at the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. I have a longstanding interest in understanding the risk associated with surgery for older patients and creating interventions to improve recovery. I'm delighted to be able to speak today to one of the world's experts on delirium and cognition in older surgical patients. The American Society of Anesthesiology has launched the Perioperative Brain Health Initiative, a public health campaign focused on improving brain health around the time of surgery for older patients. Dr. Avedan's work is central to our goals with this initiative. Welcome, Michael. Thank you for joining us today. To start out, can you tell us about yourself and your research with the ENGAGES trial?
Sure. Good morning, Stacy. It's great to talk to you. The ENGAGES trial randomized 1,232 patients who were 60 years and older and undergoing major surgery. One group received EEG-guided anesthesia, and the other usual care group received what was typically usual care at our institution. And the purpose of the trial was to answer the important question of whether EEG-guided anesthetic administration decreased the incidence of postoperative delirium in older adults undergoing major surgery.
Michael, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to study this question or what led up to this study?
Sure. Initially, I was doing research looking at EEG brain monitoring and intraoperative awareness. I actually led two large trials, one of which was sponsored by the ASA, looking into that problem. The research showed that with volatile anesthetic agents, setting an alert for a low volatile anesthetic concentration was as effective as EEG brain monitoring in preventing intraoperative awareness. But the question that arose out of that research and that was very much debated in the field was not only was it dangerous to give too little anesthesia, but was there danger in giving too much? At the same time, there was a growing concern about perioperative brain health and postoperative delirium, which the ASA has embraced as a major focus. So we wanted to address the question, could we as anesthesiologists, through what we do in the operating room, impact the likelihood that our patients will experience postoperative delirium? Our research here at Washington University and at other institutions showed that when there were patterns of EEG suppression or flatlining of the EEG during surgery, there was a considerably increased risk of postoperative delirium. Furthermore, and interestingly, that risk of delirium appeared to increase with longer durations of EEG suppression during surgery. So really the important question to answer coming out of this was whether the suppressed pattern during surgery was causally linked to postoperative delirium, or whether people with vulnerable brains were just more likely to have EEG suppression during surgery. And that was the impetus for the ENGAGES trial, in which we randomized older adults, as I described, having major surgery to have EEG guidance of anesthesia or to have usual care.
Michael, the ENGAGES trial found that postoperative delirium occurred in 26% of the EEG-guided group and 23% of the usual care group, and that difference wasn't statistically significant. Were you surprised by the findings?
Yeah, absolutely, Stacey. You know, contrary to our hypothesis, as you noted, there was actually an increase in delirium incidence by 3 percentage points in the EEG-guided group. And it's true that this increase was not statistically significant, but it was definitely surprising. And this was contrary to our hypothesis and really conflicted with results of previous studies that had examined this question. So there have been at least three other trials, big trials, including one by our own group that was a sub-study of the BAG recall trial, which was one of the trials into intraoperative awareness and was funded by the ASA. And in all three of these large trials, there was the suggestion that EEG guidance of anesthesia could actually decrease postoperative delirium incidence. So now you had the results of the ENGAGES trial, which threw the cat among the pigeons, in finding a result that really didn't seem to corroborate these previous studies.
What clinical points would you take from your study findings?
There was a lot that we learned, Stacey. So first of all, it was really interesting and notable that we were able to teach anesthesia clinicians, including anesthesiologists, certified registered nurse anesthetists, residents, and student nurse anesthetists, to recognize some of the key EEG patterns or features that are often seen during general anesthesia, in this case with a volatile anesthetic agent. Most importantly, they were able to recognize EEG suppression, but there were also many other EEG features that they were able to recognize. It was also really notable that through this study, we showed that we could change practice in the real world. This was a pragmatic trial. And we showed that we could decrease volatile anesthetic administration by 14%. And there was almost a 50%, so half, decrease in the amount of time with EEG suppression in the intervention group. Just something to comment on, because there's been so much interest generated by an exploratory finding, is that we looked at various other outcomes. But one intriguing post hoc exploratory finding was that the 30-day mortality rate was lower in the EEG-guided group than in the control group. So just to put that in context, only 4 patients died by 30 days in the EEG-guided group, whereas 19 died by 30 days in the usual care group.
That's a striking result. How does that compare with other studies?
You know, that's a really important question, Stacey, because it's always necessary to ask, is this a result that's plausible, and how does it fit with what we already know? And notably, I actually just did a meta-analysis on this, and most other studies that have randomized to EEG-guided care or usual care have not found any impact on mortality. So this result actually conflicts with what's already been published. It's a post hoc exploratory finding. So I think it should be viewed as hypothesis generating and shouldn't be overinterpreted at this stage.
And regarding your depth of anesthesia monitoring and EEG guidance during operating room cases, what do you think clinicians should take away from your study? Should they change their practice?
Well, it's a difficult question. I certainly wouldn't jettison using EEG guidance, and, you know, we'll come back to that. But at the same time, I don't think that you can say that EEG guidance can improve postoperative outcomes, because the evidence, frankly, is just too contradictory to draw firm conclusions. There are other large ongoing trials. So in particular, I can think of two. There is the Balanced Anesthesia Study, which is being conducted by colleagues from Australia and elsewhere around the world, which is randomizing over 6,000 patients to EEG guidance or to usual care. And their primary outcome is mortality at 1 year. And we're actually conducting a follow-up partner trial to the ENGAGES trial called ENGAGES Canada. And that's been funded by the Canadian Institute of Health Research. The principal investigator for this trial is Dr. Alain Deschamps in Montreal. We're about halfway through enrolling to this study. It's also 1,200 patients, conducted at four Canadian sites, and importantly, it's focusing on patients undergoing cardiac surgery, which is a high-risk population. Similar to our previous ENGAGES trial, the intervention here is EEG guidance with the purpose of avoiding EEG suppression, and this trial will also examine delirium as well as mortality as outcomes. So I think certainly we'll have more information about both delirium and mortality following these trials. But I really want to caution that even after these trials are complete, it will be necessary to do a much larger pragmatic trial if we hope to answer these questions with more certainty and precision. And the reason for this is that if there are differences, especially with mortality, but also with delirium, they're likely to be very small, and only a large study will provide precision to this question. And as I said, the same applies to delirium, because I think we now know that if EEG guidance does prevent postoperative delirium, even in high-risk older adults, the effect is likely to be small. And, you know, all the trials that we've conducted are probably not large enough to detect small effects.
So, Michael, given that your findings didn't show a difference in the incidence of delirium, should we be routinely monitoring the brain of adults during surgery?
I'm glad you asked me that question, Stacey, because it's really a critically important question and one that many anesthesiologists are asking. And in my opinion, absolutely yes, we must monitor the brain during surgery, and EEG is a good way to do it. If you were to ask me, can you provide hard data to show that it improves outcomes, my answer would be no. And I'm aware of that contradiction, but it's hard to show outcome benefits with any monitor, Stacey, whether it's a pulse oximeter, an ECG, a capnograph. I don't know that that matters. Monitoring the brain is really a good idea for our profession in principle, because the brain is the target organ of general anesthesia. Why would we be monitoring every other vital organ and not the vital organ in which we are most interested? I think we should be doing everything that we can to monitor the brain. The EEG provides useful information during sleep and during anesthesia, and for me that is sufficient justification for monitoring. At the very least, the EEG provides information suggesting that traumatic awareness is unlikely.
So now, what about excessive depth? If you saw a patient having EEG suppression, should you go ahead and decrease anesthetic administration?
Yes. So obviously that's a question that follows from your last one and from ENGAGES, Stacey. And as a point of principle, I think we should be targeting giving the appropriate amount of anesthetic for every patient under our care. And EEG suppression typically suggests that anesthetic administration might be in excess of what a patient requires. It doesn't always mean that, but it often means that. So although I can't say it will improve a patient's outcome, I do think I can say that you don't need to be administering general anesthesia to excess to achieve EEG suppression in the vast majority of instances. So when it does occur, I think that clinicians, that anesthesiologists and others in the anesthesia care team should decrease the concentration of anesthetic that they're administering. You know, as I referred to earlier, there are important differences in EEG waves between people who are anesthetized and those who are awake. And the more you use the EEG during surgery, I think the more information you glean from it and the greater the benefit that you derive as a clinician. So the results of our trial did show that avoiding EEG suppression is unlikely to have a big impact on postoperative delirium. But one study shouldn't be viewed as definitive or providing the final word. It's just a contribution. And it's also important that we should be doing more studies along these lines, both ourselves and other clinical scientists.
Well, on that note, Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning, and thank you for support of the ASA Perioperative Brain Health Initiative campaign.
Stacey, you're very welcome. I've enjoyed speaking with you as always.
You've been listening to the American Society of Anesthesiologists Perioperative Brain Health Initiative podcast, promoting brain health for older adults around the time of surgery. Thank you again to the Perioperative Brain Health Initiative supporters, Masimo, Medtronic, and Edwards Life Sciences, whose contributions help provide tools and resources to optimize the cognitive recovery and perioperative experience for adults 65 and older.